says, Ray.
I smoke it.
Want to come up?
My dog.
Yeah, you want to.
What are you going to do with that?
You want to cross?
I didn't realize you were doing that. It didn't help.
We'll work that in.
Yeah.
This hating the season.
That's exactly right.
It's a good mirror. Okay, let's go. I'm calling the House Committee on Healthcare to order for June the 3rd. An open and information meeting on metrics. Is that like the conversion between foot and kilometer or something?
Exactly, between English and...
and pseudoscience. Please, introduce yourself.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, Bruce Goldberg, director of the Oregon Health Authority.
For the record, I'm Tina Edlin. I'm the Chief of Policy for the Oregon Health Authority.
And we are here today to talk with you about the work we've been doing in measuring the progress of our health system transformation. And actually, it's exciting to be here today because for the first time, I think we can show you that we're moving from theory into practice, and what I'm here today is to walk you through what is our first quarterly report, which will show you the baseline metrics in terms of quality and cost in what we're doing with our health system transformation. As many of you know, we've made a commitment as a state to do several things in terms of our health system transformation. We have agreed to reduce the annual increase in the per capita cost of care by 2 percentage points. We've agreed to ensure that quality of care improves, that population health improves. We've agreed to set up a quality incentive pool whereby we will begin to pay for outcomes and performance, not just simply for providing care. We have a commitment to measure and to publicly report on all those things. And today, we have the pleasure of showing you our first quarterly report on exactly this. This is baseline data. It really, on the quality side, this is the baseline quality data that we will be measuring improvement against. Now, the trick in this is that we have baseline data for organizations that didn't exist a year ago. Because what we're really looking at is back to 2011. And so we've worked very hard to create there were no CCOs in 2011. But we've sort of recreated from geographically who and what they were, their membership was, to give us that baseline to begin to measure performance going forward.
Bruce, that makes a very important point. Let's not go by it so quickly.
Yeah.
The intention is reward for improvement. I mean, if a metric went from really, really terrible to only a little terrible, that's going to be a success, at least for a while, rather than meeting an absolute dichotomous criterion.
Chair Greenlick, yes, that's right. There are two ways that a CCO can get access to the quality pool, and one is if they meet the benchmark that we've established. The benchmarks usually at the high-performing Medicaid plans nationally, so the 90th percentile. If they have already achieved the benchmark, they're good to go. If they are just getting, as you said, either a little bit better or a little less worse, I guess that's the other way they can. And the work of the committee that I'll talk about later was partially to establish those benchmarks and to establish perform improvement goals.
Thank you. That was just a very important point I wanted.
No, that's exactly, and you'll see people are starting in different places, and the goal is to give everyone credit for moving forward, and that's exactly it. So we have a set of 17 measures, and you'll see those in a moment.
Yeah.
by which we are measuring CCO performance and in which we incent them on. And it's exactly what Chair Greenlick was mentioning. These are the 17 metrics by which CCOs beginning in July will have 2% of their payment is going to be based on their performance in these 17 metrics. And in subsequent years, that percentage of payment will grow. There are then another 16 metrics that, although the CCOs are not going to be specifically paid for, we as a state are using the first 17 and those additional 16 to gauge our performance with the feds about how we're doing. So that's how this is set up. We have had a technical group that's been responsible for this. I'm going to turn things over to Tina to really walk you through how all of this has gone, and then we'll show you, and I believe you have hard copies of the report, which shows CCO by CCO.
So the metrics, the 33 metrics, can seem a little bit overwhelming when you take a look at them, but they in fact fit into these seven quality improvement focus areas. It was actually a pretty thoughtful process working with CMS and working with stakeholders here to identify what seven areas we would really want to focus on as Medicaid programs. So, you know, we have the behavioral and physical health coordination and perinatal and maternity care. We deliver about half of the births in the state through Medicaid, so having a focus in the area of perinatal care and maternity care was obviously important. I won't read each of these areas, but I just wanted to highlight that, in fact, these metrics all do fit into one of these areas. The reason there's this statement about this report contains 29 of the 33, so this report is not all of the metrics. We thought it was really important to get the report out with the metrics that we had completed, but there were still some that are out for review with CCOs, some that were a little bit more difficult to get the baseline data for. So not all of the metrics are in this report. They will be in the next one. So as Bruce said, these measures were selected by a committee, a metrics and scoring committee, which was statutorily created in Senate Bill 1580 or House Bill 1580. It was created in October of 2012. And then the metrics were selected by them, in October of 2012, and then revised and adopted by CMS in later that same year, at the end of the year. As I said, this is a subset that you see in the quality report. 11 of the 17 metrics are there, and the remaining six are still being reviewed. I think the metrics and scoring committee is really an important element of this, because it is a statutory requirement, but what the group has done is some really phenomenal work in a very short period of time. It's a requirement of the statute that the committee is made up of three representative CCOs, three members at large, and three measurement experts. So it brought together a really diverse group with different interests in being there. And as I said, they did a lot of really hard work. We brought in some outside expertise to help us along the path and in fact invited CMS to listen to every single one of our meetings. They were open public meetings. It was a really good discussion, and I think we ended up with a good product that has some of the old style metrics in it, but it also has some that really move us forward. On top of that, what we established, because, you know, once you select the metrics, and even though we are obligated and wanted to stay true to nationally vetted and adopted standards, there's still a lot of detail about how they're collected, and it's a lot of really deep-in-the-weeds technical detail. So what we did was create a technical work group with representation of every single CCO in the state to really work through that, okay, in a practical sense, how are we going to get this data? And that committee has been, again, doing some really good work. We're down to the last few details on specifications. Those are all posted on our website, which I'll actually show you a little bit of here in a minute. This next slide, I wanted just to show what's in this quarterly report, give you an example. I'm not going to go through every single measure by any means, but just to show you what kinds of things will be there. This will change over time. Obviously, this is just baseline data from 2011 that we have now. This is the first measurement year for CCOs. As soon as we start getting data that shows the progress, shows how we're doing now, we'll be able to start to show not only how we're doing against this baseline, but it's trend data. So what the display will look very different as we go on. So these are just some things that obviously are really important to us here. Preventing unnecessary utilization, it's a huge cost driver in the healthcare system. The measures for this are really looking at emergency department utilization, outpatient utilization. Obviously, we want to look at those together. We hope to see emergency department utilization go down, while we want to see outpatient utilization go up. We want to see doctor's visits, actually, and especially primary care visits, go up. Plan readmissions. We don't want to see readmissions increasing. We want to see that decreasing over time. Readmissions are another cost driver that actually can be addressed through community action. The next slide is timeliness of prenatal care. I think this is a good example of the kind of variation we see across the CCOs, and this is a measure of women getting in early in their pregnancy to get adequate prenatal care. It shows that, again, you know, we have a lot of our CCOs are already very, very close or exceed the benchmark, but some have some work to do. This is a real opportunity for peer-to-peer learning. One of the aspects of health system transformation that's really important to us is bringing CCOs together to share how they're doing things and to share best practices, and especially around these areas where we really want to see some change.
Tina?
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you want to ask a question, just break in. But for me,
I have a question then too, but go ahead.
Go for it.
So, if I understand this correctly, we took this 2011 state baseline, and I assume that the health authority had to go through and reallocate people, patients, healthcare results from 2011 to the new CCO boundaries, which is probably very complicated. Plus, I understand that there was an enormous amount of work and thought that had to go into how do you set up these performance metrics, what's meaningful, what drives behavior in the right directions, how do we hold people accountable. I get all of that, and my hat is really off to be able to show this much information at this point. However, the question I have is, so we are in June of 2013, and the first measurement of the incentive and performance measures for purposes of contract renewal, I think, is going to be December 31st, correct? So how are CCOs going to, and they haven't known what these are, so they haven't been able to drive the numbers, I guess, to focus in on the areas where they would need to focus in on. So how does the availability of the incentive measures and the quality or the performance measures more broadly, how does that fit in with the calendar year that we're on and the fact that CCOs haven't necessarily known what these would be?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Congert, the set of performance metrics, this was part of the reason it was really important to us to know, to base these on federally vetted measures. They were selected back in November of 2012. So at the highest level, we've known what they are at that level. Getting the detailed specifications, you're right. They are the detailed specifications for the last six measures are out for review right now. They've been done for a couple. Most of them have been done for a couple of months now. Different CCOs are taking different approaches to that. The goal here is just to move the mark a little bit and get a little bit of improvement. There are some that are identifying, high cost, high utilizer clinics and really focusing on them to get the change. So they're using different approaches, and we're encouraging sharing those approaches. But yeah, the timeline is pretty aggressive timeline.
May I follow up, because I'm not sure that I got 100%. That was, I appreciate that. May I follow up?
Please.
All right.
Please.
So the follow-up question
Let's
is...
Let's have a little seminar.
Yeah, and I appreciate that opportunity to interact and ask these questions. So the corollary to that question is we have a baseline and a goal for the whole state, meaning that we're not measuring improvement. And when we look at that, so let's say here the benchmark, there's a couple of CCOs, looks like All Care is the highest over the state benchmark and the highest over the baseline as well. Does that mean that All Care wins that incentive race, or are we also looking at the baseline for each individual CCO? I thought that was part of the nature of prior question, but I just want to make sure.
You're not rewarding the baseline, though. You're rewarding performance.
Right, right. Chair Greenlick, Representative Conger, Chair Greenlick is right. We are rewarding two things. One is if there is improvement, and we actually probably need to think about how we display this to show that, because I've been asked this question by other people, that in fact that you don't have to reach the state baseline, you don't have to reach the benchmark in order to be rewarded. All you have to do is improve and improve. It's usually by about 3 points. It's different for each of the measures. Usually right around about 3 points that you have to improve in order to access that part of the quality pool. So we really wanted to focus on, as Dr. Goldberg said, we really wanted to acknowledge that people are in different places on the continuum, and right. And we want to give them the opportunity to be rewarded for improvement and not have to wait until they get to some mark that might be really very difficult, a long way off, and frustrating.
Let me ask a technical question, and your example you just gave it. These are statistical distributions with an N of 16 or 15, whatever is the number, right? Now, how do you know, what's the variance around the state mean? I mean, how do you know somebody... How do you know these aren't variables that will be unstable, so that this group will go up 3 points having done nothing, this group will go down 3 points having done something? I mean, you don't know. I mean, to what extent are you dealing with the variance?
So, Chair Green, no, you're absolutely right. That's a significant issue, with a statistical issue with doing this kind of work. What the Metrics and Scoring Committee decided to do, though, was to keep it very simple. There's a methodology that was actually developed in Minnesota that looked at, okay, to get from where you are to this benchmark in a 10-year period of time, and it was just literally a consensus goal of, you know, it shouldn't take you more than 10 years to get to a benchmark. So they just took the difference and divided by 10 and said that's good, and we're not going to worry about statistical significance. We don't, you know, we really want to just, the goal here is to push people in a direction, an improvement direction. So the Metrics and Scoring Committee decided to adopt that approach rather than get into too much detail around statistical variation.
Yeah, we need to have a cup of coffee.
So I have a couple questions. One is just, again, technically trying to understand this. If you want to be at the 75th percentile, and that's what you set the benchmark, that means that you want to be in the top 25%?
Yes, correct? Yes.
And why is it that in some cases you chose 75th, some cases 90th?
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Kenny Geyer, that was, again, a consensus view of the Metrics and Scoring Committee that we were going through. We initially pegged most of these measures at the 90th percentile nationally. In some cases, the 90th percentile was extraordinarily beyond where we were, and the group felt establishing a 75th percentile as a benchmark, again, drove the change, and it was a consensus view of the group.
Okay, and then one more. You can probably guess what I'm going to ask in terms of content around prenatal care and maternal outcomes. So the timeliness of prenatal care gets at something that, you know, we all agree is incredibly critical, how kids get off on the right start. But I almost see it as an activity as opposed to a performance. You know, what are the pregnancy outcomes for the mom in terms of gestational diabetes, birth, all of those kind of things. And in addition, what are the birth outcomes for the kids? Just seems like, because you could manage to sign someone up and then not have very good ongoing care, and so I'm curious about.
So you're getting at, I think, one of the issues we've talked about a lot, the committee's talked about a lot. This is in its infancy. And these are many of these are really about process measures. Mm-hmm. They really don't get at some of the outcomes. And we understand that. That's an issue nationally. Mm-hmm. And I think our ability, not just as a state with a Medicaid program, but nationally, to really get at some of those outcome measures, we're not, the science isn't there yet. I also think around some of these, it also boils down to sometimes a numbers problem, where for something like prenatal care and low birth weight babies, obviously, you might say, gee, one of the outcomes should be we reduce the numbers of low birth weight babies. But then you get down to, we've got some health plans and some CCOs where their size is such that the difference between one or two might drive them from being the best to the worst. And so there's some technical issues. I think, and it's a great discussion, we've really chosen a path here of trying to get going and measure and report. And we've been really clear about the fact that this will change and evolve. This isn't the end. It's the beginning. We felt that the most important thing was to get out there and to publicly begin to show that CCOs are serious about this, that we as the state are serious about this, that we are going to measure, we are going to report, mm-hmm. we are going to put it out there publicly, we are going to pay differently. Mm-hmm. Did we choose all the right things? I'm sure we could discuss for many, many months. Many years, and I think we should continue to, as we continue to have that discussion and as these metrics mature, our hope is we'll get to some of those outcomes. But it's been a hard process.
Yeah,
I'd like to comment on your use of the 90 percentile. Usually, when you're talking about 90 percentile, you're talking about a distribution of. I mean, let's, you know, like any one of these 69%. The 90th percentile in that population would be across a whole distribution of centers. And how do they distribute from 40% to 95%? The 90th percentile might be 80%.
That's correct.
So, I mean, essentially, we're talking about a fixed measure that...
We're comparing how other states are doing it, basically, right?
Right.
We're not comparing it to the ideal necessarily. We're comparing it to where we stand vis-a-vis other states.
That's right.
Other states, sort of other health plans,
nationally. Other Medicaid programs.
So, wait
a minute. I don't think that's right.
National Medicaid percentile. So how
national Medicaid programs. Uh-huh. So it's the 90th percentile for Medicaid nationally. But you're right. It could be
percentile of their performance.
Right. So you're, but
it might
you're
be
right.
40%.
That's right. You're right.
Right.
It could
might be.
Be
the 90th percentile.
Right. That's exactly right.
But when this says 90% as this mental health assessment within 60 days, that's just a not. I mean, that's a specific dichotomous number.
Right.
Yes. No. 90% of the time.
So 69.
Well, but it's how many
prenatal care. 69% of women getting prenatal care puts you at the 90th percentile of what Medicaid does nationally.
That's right.
There's only 10% that do better than that.
And if 69% on the mental health follow-up, I don't have that in front of me right now, mental illness follow-up, if 69% got it, I mean, that's, you know, there's going to be a distribution across that as well. I wanted to follow up, though, on this maternal and child health issue, because there is a particular group we've created internally of experts in maternal and child health and program people inside of OHA to really look at what the next phase of maternal and child health measures might look like. you know, I mean, Bruce is exactly right. We're really in our infancy in this measurement. We're really trying to figure out how to bring in more electronic health record data so you get more clinical data and can really start to move toward outcomes. This state, the committee has adopted a procedure of reviewing these metrics on an annual basis. The thinking right now is we want to probably stay with the same measures for a couple of years to let things, you know, to sort of settle a little bit, but that we will then be ready to start to incorporate measures or drop measures from this list when we see that, you know, it really isn't driving things the way we wanted them to, or we're achieving our goals and we want to replace it with something else that's more transformative. So there's a lot of that kind of
work. So I'll throw out one more, and I think that we talked about the same thing either a year ago or at the beginning of this session, and you had said the same thing. We're, you know, we're putting something in place, and then we'll continue to look at it. So I'm going to keep asking.
Yeah.
And the other is just unintended pregnancies, both for teens and people, the one key question that people keep asking out there, because it's such a driver of not only healthcare but social determinants of health, poverty, all of those kinds of things. And if we want to get broader than just individually serving people in our healthcare system, but look at the whole picture, those kind of public health measures are really critical.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Can I ask one more technical question, though? The health share, family share, you know, I'm trying to understand how, you know, one's a little below the benchmark or state benchmark, and one's above it. They both serve a similar population, so I'm wondering how you got to the 2011 statistics. Are you doing it by who their providers have been and what their outcomes were, as opposed to population in general? Okay.
Correct. They serve a different population with a different provider group. It isn't
you did it by provider
important.
Outcomes.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's a key piece of why there's a difference. It's how those part of it can be in places a difference in the population, but part of it is certainly a difference in the providers and how they approach care and engage patients, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to understand just a little bit more the relationship between the state baseline and the benchmark, or if there is a relationship. I understand where the baseline comes from, but I'm trying to understand, so what is the, when we talk about the benchmark, I mean, what are we striving to do with the benchmark in that? Because as I look at different ones, there's different spreads. And so I'm just trying to understand, is there a relationship and what is it? What's the...
So the state baseline is really just an average of the entire population across the state. That's all it is. It's actually...
Average of the population?
It's an average of... Oh, I should look at Lori. I think it's an average of the population. But I'll confirm. I'll confirm that. Rather than just an average of the CCOs. The benchmark, though, is this, in most cases, the 90th percentile of the national Medicaid data. In some cases, it's in some cases, actually, there are a few cases where the benchmark is consensus of the committee because there wasn't a national number.
Okay.
So that's the difference.
So is that that's the intent? Will always be the intent for the benchmark is to be some percentage of the Medicaid? I mean, is that, I'm trying to understand the longer term where we're trying to improve, how, you know, what's going to drive the improvement?
Well, our hope is that sometime, that in the future, we define what the 90th percentile is.
Right. Okay. We needed to have something to shoot for that was realistic. So I would say if the best 90% of people are getting it right half the time, that might be where we start.
Sure.
But I don't think any of us would want to say, gee, that's what we're going to stay with. We would then move that benchmark out. You get to a point, you also can't with any of this expect 100%, but you get to the point that you're comfortable.
Sure.
That we've pushed things as far as we can go. And those would be the times and the places we would then seek to change measures, or that we're making such good, steady progress, we'd like to now focus on something else.
Okay, thank you.
May I make an observation? That's just cool. You know, I love this graph. It's really jumps out at you visually. The biggest gap between our 2011 and our state benchmark is the enrollment in the patient-centered primary care home, which is not surprising given that that's a new development. But the other two biggest ones that jump out are the developmental screening in the first 3 years of life and adolescence. So I'm going to drive home that message again about getting off on the early start in life. And one of the things that's always frustrated me is our particular employer-based health insurance reduces visits for adolescents to once every 4 years. So I pay out of pocket. I'm like, you know, this is when you start seeing the curvature of the spine, and this is when you want them to have their vision tested, and you want the questions to ask them as they're hitting puberty. And it's shocking to me that one of our esteemed health insurance providers here that we've had for 18 years reduces a well visit to once every 4 years the minute you hit your teens.
Which is exactly the reason the committee chose that as a measure, because they saw those exact opportunities. It's a time to it's an opportunity to intervene at a really important time in a child's life, and it's really, the committee actually thought that it was transformative in and of itself, that seeing kids at that age and intervening at that age really could cause, you know, affect health, their health status for their lives.
Smoking, you know, many things.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I'm taking up too much time, but having a little trouble bending my mind around what one of these 75th
percentile
means in terms of national populations. Does that mean that 75% of all people nationally received it, or does that somehow have to do with programs in terms of the 75th percentile of program averages? I don't know what it means.
Chair Greenlick, my understanding, and I'll confirm this, my understanding is this is the data that is submitted by Medicaid plans to NCQA, the National Committee for Quality Assurance, and they submit their quality data every year. And my understanding, it's across all of those populations, all the Medicaid populations for which they submit data, and then the 75th percentile for that population is what we anchored ourselves to.
Well, but that population either had a prenatal visit, say, or didn't have a prenatal visit. You can't get to 75% of a prenatal visit. Or 75% of the population had a prenatal visit or didn't have a prenatal visit.
Chair Greenlick, that's exactly how the measure works. It's 75% of the population had a prenatal visit in the time period that they were that they were looking for.
Sure that's correct.
And then you take 90% of that to get to the 90% benchmark?
Well, so the, okay, the
75. How do you think the 75th benchmark? One I'm looking at.
Can I see if I got that?
Well, why don't we let that figure out?
You're looking at the chart that shows 69.4%.
I'm picking any chart here.
Well, let's look at timeliness of prenatal care.
All right.
Okay.
Well, child visits in the first 15 months of life. How about that one?
I don't have that one in front of me because I don't have the whole report.
So looking at
Says the benchmark is 77.3, and it comes from billing claims.
Right.
And it says the benchmark is 90 percentile.
Right.
90 percentile of what?
Of the
individuals that did or didn't receive a prenatal
care. Of the national Medicaid population, the 77.3% is the 90th percentile. Only 10% of the
90th percentile of what?
Of the national Medicaid population, only 10%. Of the, well, so it is programs. It has to be programs. So only 10% are above. You're right.
90% of the programs.
Yeah, are above that. Right.
All right. You want to answer it now?
Yeah. No. That's what I was thinking too. Yeah. That's for at 70. If we come out at 77.3% across all of our programs have a well child visit in the first 15 months of life,
that's
we
right.
would be at 90th percentile nationally, which means 90% of people of other programs across the state do worse
less,
than us, right. and 10%
do
better.
Better. That's right. That's right. Great. That's right.
And this means that right now, 90% of the programs do less than 77.3, and only
10%
of
do
the
better
programs
than
in
right.
Medicare
That's
achieve
right.
that.
No, you're right.
Based on billing data.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
You want to be in the top 10%.
Well, you want to be perfect.
As close to perfect as one can get.
No, I wouldn't agree with that. I wouldn't say getting to 78% is perfect.
No.
I would say getting to 100% is perfect.
And then we want that 100% to raise the bar for everyone else.
Yes, that's
once we overshoot it.
That's right. That is what our goal is. Uh-huh. Okay,
all
you
right.
Want to go to the next?
I'll go with your second sentence.
Well, I think we can go on to...
Bruce, I understand you're going to off before 2 o'clock.
We're going to go to the financial
day. And it won't be because of anything we said. Just sneak out. Tina can handle it.
So the...
I'm going to protect her.
Yeah, she's going to protect you. We don't.
So if we go to the financial data, financial data, this is very preliminary data. I want to emphasize that it includes the calendar year. The baseline is the calendar year 2011, just like the quality data is. The current data is only from the fourth quarter of 2012, so it's just a snapshot of data. There's still a lot of missing data in here, data where, you know, claims are submitted but payments aren't made yet. So this data won't be considered anything other than preliminary until we get to the end of the year and enough time we get past what they call claims lag, about 60 days after the end of the year.
In other words, this data will change.
This data will change, that's right.
And the reason it's there isn't to show it as complete data.
Right.
We had a lot of internal discussion about this. Should we wait till it's complete or should we get it out now? And the reason to get it out now was to begin to show people what we're going to be following. And it's really a couple of things. We're going to show both the utilization of services as well as the dollars paid for those services as well. So it's a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have before you is showing, you know, first off, utilization of services. So how many maternity patient days or medical services, patient inpatient days or specialty visits, some of these things we want to see increase. And then the other piece of it will be the dollars paid. So that, likewise, one will see the dollars paid for these services and be able to show whether or not we're meeting our, what in essence is our 2% reduction in
mm-hmm.
cost.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the financial data will get shown.
And so... So the assumption, because there's an enormous amount of factors have influence upon patient days and the other things. So, but the assumption is that some of the actions we're taking through CCNOs, regardless of what else is going on, will lead to the 2% or the cap net. I'm just having a hard time when I look at these, and I understand this is just preliminary, just one quarter, but there's some big changes there already.
Correct.
And I don't try to subscribe to anything, but that just makes me think about a lot of other factors, economic factors and things that have impacts on people that make choices about what they do. So how do those ultimately get figured into this benchmark, and how are we making progress or aren't we? Or do they?
Yeah, how does that relate? It's really not 2% reduction.
Right.
The better way is it's a 3% increase.
Increase,
correct.
Yeah.
So they're in the benchmark? Is that, I think, what there's a library was asking?
You're correct. There are a lot of factors, and I think all we're doing in this is
tracking
it, showing the data. There are going to be some things that we will want to see increase. So because remember, you know, the easiest way to meet one's cost targets is just not to deliver.
That's right.
And so part of this is why we're marrying both the quality side and the performance metrics with the cost data as well. But I think with both the cost and the utilization, there are some mm-hmm. things we want to see go up. So we want to see primary care visits go up. We'd like to see emergency department visits go down. you know, we'd like to see, you know, ambulatory surgery centers utilized more. And what we hope is that this will actually raise questions and will allow us to look at that and answer questions. We don't think this data by itself will, I think, answer some of the questions you're asking, Representative, which is, okay, why did this change? Mm-hmm. What drove that? Was it something the CCO did?
Sure.
Is this something that's happening across our communities? Mm-hmm. But this is really how we're going to begin to track this, and I think this data becomes more useful and better over time as you can see trends. It's really difficult to say, you can't draw any conclusion, understand anything more than this being, here's what you can expect.
It's going
from
in the right direction.
Sure.
So do you want to just go out to the web? We can just show it.
Yeah.
You want to do that real quickly?
I'm going to see if I can get there.
Yeah, well, let me ask you another financial question then, if you're leaving this area. I was sitting figuring out how I would do the benchmarks and the way to end up with a
We're going to have to find the right page here.
I just wanted to wait to ask the question until you were
I think if you go over on the left and it says incentive metrics, I hope that's where it is. Yeah. Is that taking us there, Lori? The right place? Can you help get us to the right place? Oh.
Never let a physician fool around with a computer.
Yeah, I know. Here is the...
You don't want me doing this. You should, Tina.
Okay, you want to answer the... Okay, I'll do this while you answer the financial question.
I was toying in my mind with establishing benchmarks for financial when the ultimate objective is to end up with the 3.2, no more than the 3.2%.
Correct.
So that would be the benchmark, something that got you there. But you could get there in a lot of different ways, couldn't you? I mean, you've got all those factors and they're all very varying independently or almost independently. And do you have them all increase no more than 3.2%, or do you figure if you can reduce hospital 6%, you can increase outpatient visits 7% and still achieve it? I mean, there are ways you want to achieve it. It's that's going to be a very interesting exercise to figure out how to compound that.
That's why we're ultimately, it's a global budget, and the benchmark is the per capita cost, and it is indeed a 3.4% increase
of total per capita cost.
Total per capita cost, and we're looking at how we can. I think the benchmarks are more about how you can track performance and which way those things are going, and I think we do want to. There are benchmarks we want. There are numbers of categories that we want to see increase, and there are some categories we want to see decrease.
Even if you can achieve the 3.4% some other way.
Well, because
you don't want to double the emergency room visits and reduce some other thing, because that's not the way we believe healthcare should be delivered.
Because one of the key things is this can easily be manipulated with merely how much one is reimbursing for care. Ultimately, you cannot change, you can change the cost trend, but not change fundamentally how care is being delivered simply by cutting payment rates and manipulating payment rates. So that's why those are in development, and we're struggling with that. But the issue is to try and show how the delivery of care is changing rather than simply how we're pricing it. And that's the notion of the cost and the utilization data and the benchmarks, because we don't want to see, well, you save money in the emergency department, but your emergency department utilization increased twofold. All that means is you've either changed the kinds of services you're delivering there, or more than likely you've changed the reimbursement and haven't fundamentally changed how care is happening. So that's where we are.
Okay, it's up. So if you want to show it, we can just show quickly. This is probably, we're going to try to move to a quarterly report that's all based on the web rather than printed copies. And this is our first, for this first quarterly report, this is how the data looks. We can just show you a sample CCO. The data will be available by CCO and by measure. So here's how this is Pacific Source Community Solutions. This is, again, their baseline data. Shows how they do on each of the measures against the benchmark and the baseline. And then if we go back,
we can do it.
And look, and obviously this will look different. This will look different as time goes by too, and we'll actually be able to show some trend data.
So then you can also
know the adolescent one on that last one. I want to know the adolescent outcomes on that last one.
On that last one? Okay.
Let's go to that. So you want to
go by
metric?
It used to be my insurance company.
Okay. Go by CCO?
Okay.
By metric?
Go either way.
You can go by CCO.
Or by metric.
You want to go to that same CCO?
Mm-hmm. And look at adolescent.
See, that's exactly what you can do.
But there's adolescent well care.
This must be them in Bend, right?
It's actually both.
Oh.
We'll be splitting it out next month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in what else?
And Hood River.
Mm-hmm. So I don't want to just pick on one.
Yeah.
CCO.
But you do.
But this is.
How the policy, if it's the same as the employer-based policy we have, translates into the metrics.
Ah.
See, but we're hoping that individuals will go to the CCO that they're interested in. And look at it either by CCO or, as you indicated, you're interested in not just the CCO, but that you can also look by metric. And over time, we'll be able to...
So one of the big questions is, are we going to be using these metrics for the health insurance exchange? Will you be able to do the same kind of thing when you're choosing...
The goal in the long run is to begin to integrate these metrics with both the insurance exchange, with public employee and educator purchasing, with some modifications. And part of that is different populations.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a very, in the Oregon Health Plan, half of the Oregon Health Plan are kids. And we do half of the deliveries. So obviously, some of the metrics are much more skewed towards maternal child health issues. In other lines of business, the insurance exchange won't be as heavily weighted in that area. They'll have some of the common metrics, but may have some additional metrics that reflect that population. But indeed, you can see how far off we all are in adolescent health measures. And then over time, what we'd like to do is be able to show improvement from quarter to quarter.
So our next steps, the next quarterly report, is due in August. These follow right on our reporting requirements for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that we'll be publicly reporting immediately after those due dates. So the next one will be in August.
And this will be quarterly like clockwork.
What efforts are in place to help them improve after you've seen the...
Pardon, I'm sorry.
I said, what efforts are you putting in place? What resources are you putting in place to help individual CCOs improve?
Actually, quite a few. I mean, we have a group of people we call innovator agents. That was actually part of the statutory requirements for health system transformation, based on an article by Atul Gawande about extension agents, agricultural extension agents, and they work in somewhat very much the same way in terms of being real partners with the CCOs. Initially, what a lot of the effort that they're engaged in is helping sort of identify and break bureaucratic barriers that we have at OHA so that they can achieve their goals and that we're not getting in their way to achieve their goals. But they're also, one of their assigned roles is to also be connectors and share best practices. Beside that, we have a transformation center that just started in April. It's really the place where peer-to-peer learning, learning collaboratives will take place, will organize opportunities to for CCOs who are doing really, really well to come and share what they're doing and share with other CCOs, recognizing that things that work in Baker may not work in Portland and vice versa, but there are things that will work across CCOs, so it'll give an opportunity for those kinds of improvements. So we've tried to really think about this in a much less regulatory way and much more in a let's provide the right supports and the right learning opportunities to CCOs.
So when I was studying organizational innovation, the story of the extension agent that was out helping a farmer learn how to farm better, and the farmer, after a little frustration, said, "Young man, I ain't farming as good as I know how right now." Part of the problem is to implement those kind of things. Really, I think you're moving in a great direction.
Yeah.
With a disclaimer, if I can jump in before we close, that I really think you've done an excellent job to produce these this quickly. I do agree with what I think the decisions that you've made are, in many instances, to go with things that can be measured objectively, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you're going to have metrics and they're not objective, you're killing yourself immediately. And I also understand the hard drive to get it out and get it implemented so that you can report. If you hadn't done that, you would be criticized for being too slow. So don't take this as criticism, but I did find an earlier comment about the fact that you're measuring mostly inputs, not outputs, to be profoundly true. Moreover, as a follow-up to that, when you measure inputs, you drive behavior, which doesn't necessarily drive the outcomes, which is what you want. And to the extent that you lock CCOs in by putting the carrot out there, which is additional incentive dollars, and you say, okay, we want you to improve your performance in this area, you are in some respects at risk of taking away their opportunity to innovate on the outcomes and focus their efforts where they can do the most, which is one of the greatest potential opportunities I see for our CCO experiment to do that. So, and one final point, when you measure from a baseline and you're only measuring improvement, an argument could be made that you're punishing the ones who are already doing the good work. And you don't want to do that. So as you roll forward with this, I hope that you will continue to, to come back and listen to us harp on you a little bit and work on these.
No, let me take. I think particularly that first point we've been talking about a lot, and we just had a meeting with all of the CEOs of the CCOs this past week. With the governor, we get together to try and learn from each other. And this very issue came up. And one of the things that we'll be working on is creating what we're calling, for lack of a better word right now, some shadow metrics to begin to develop some of the metrics that really are focused on the outcomes we want. Part of the reason we don't have them. No one's developed them.
Right.
People don't know how to measure them. Some of them are labor-intensive. But what we want to create is those shadow metrics, and we will begin to hopefully transition away from these towards those true outcome measures. But first, we in essence have to invent them. We have to invent not only what they are, but to be able to collect the data in a way that isn't so burdensome that people spend hundreds of thousands of dollars collecting the information. So we're committed to beginning to set up some shadow metrics and begin to do that, because that's exactly where we want to go. And it's how we've thought about all of this, which has been what's so hard, is that we're operating in sort of the old paradigm, which is pay for services, pay for process, claims based. And we want to drive it towards a different system, which doesn't exist yet, which is paying for outcomes, not paying for services. And that's not created yet. So we literally have to create that as we do our due diligence in measuring that what we're doing is having an effect. One could argue it may not be the effect we want. It is what we have, and we're committed to inventing that new piece. To the last point, we're trying not to penalize people that are doing good. They're in many places being rewarded by their getting credit if they've met those benchmarks. So
good.
They're doing okay.
Right. They were maybe a little bit ahead of the curve, and it would be a shame to...
They can focus on some of the... They're getting an ability to focus on some of the places where they're not.
Right.
In fact, one would argue... You can argue that both ways. The other argument from those who are all below the benchmark is they've got to focus on 17 areas, whereas someone else has to only focus on 13, and they're being penalized. So,
no, and it's actually a very fair point, because there could be demographic differences or geographic differences that account for some of that variation. I get that. It's way too complicated to make it perfect. But it would be a shame, you know, if a CCO had been successful already in providing prenatal care, you know, in raising the level of prenatal care to the point where there just, you know, every incremental gain from then on becomes much more difficult.
Yep.
You know, it's tough to tell them, well, you've got to improve in order to...
Right. And that last 2% is a lot harder than the first 2%.
That's right.
That's exactly it.
And I would recommend that when you want to bring people in who are doing well, bring them in before the statistics is measured in the next quarter. Well, guys, thank you very much. Oh, yeah. Okay, anybody else?
I just want to echo what Representative Conger said and what you affirmed about that again, the input and output. You know, it's not just the prenatal, it's, you know, the adolescent well visits versus how many are smoking, how many have unintended teen pregnancy, how, you know, what is the their weight, you know, what is it, body BMI, fat, yeah. Whatever, yeah. BMI. And I'm surprised if Medicaid doesn't have, you see these kind of statistics all the time about what percentage of kids are, you know, any of those kind of things. It seems like that is out there, and I wonder how much of it really is, we don't have these national Medicaid percentiles upon which you could peg your progress, or is it more that we went into this with such a fee-for-service mentality that even here in Oregon, it's taking us a while to do this transition, because these are fee-for-service kinds of measurements that we're doing. And I just wonder if it really is true that Medicaid doesn't have those, and it's so hard for you to measure against what's out there nationally, then good for us for leading that, and it's going to be a much harder job. But it really is surprising to me, because I see those kind of statistics touted all the time.
I think the issue is that what we have the most of is claims data.
Mm-hmm.
And claims data doesn't tell you what someone's, for instance, height, weight are, their body mass index. Claims data tells you they've been at the office. It doesn't even tell you whether they've been weighed or measured. And part of getting at some of the outcome measures is really more about a system of electronic health records and of collecting that kind of clinical data. And that's part of it is where we've got a claims-based system.
Yeah.
That's where we have most of the info. So that data does exist.
That helps me understand.
But a lot of those are based on samples of where an office sends in 10 records or whatever, or a school
survey
data, et cetera. So I think that's a big piece.
Yeah, that helps me understand.
It's even worse than claims data. It's claims data that doesn't produce a payment.
Correct.
So they really don't have to pay attention to it.
And, you know, in the end, part of this whole discussion is both great and frustrating in terms of one of our biggest challenges is expectations. I mean, we've got, I think our oldest CCO is 310 days old today. And yet we have these expectations that we should already be at the 90th percentile in all this. I mean, I can say, I know we're all looking at this saying, wait a minute, how come we haven't done all this yet? And I think the expectations both for our CCOs, for us as a state, are pretty tall. And I often worry about us understanding that it's taken a long time to get to where we are and to get at a lot of these behaviors, and it's going to take us a while to get out of it, but the start is to shine the light, focus attention, continue to grow and learn, and I think that's what we're trying to do.
Bruce, we've had this question before, but for the ones that have to, that don't make benchmark on 17, how do you tell them which ones to work on? Or how do you help them decide is a better way to say that.
Where to focus their attention?
Yeah, I mean, are these weighted in terms of the...
No, they're not weighted, and that was actually another really explicit discussion that the committee had, that for this first year, again, without experience, it was really, let's not do any weighting this first year. They all have equal value. However, there is a second round of funding that where there were four measures that were selected, and so in a sense, those four measures are weighted, and that you have a second chance at with those. I think that again, it's the work of the innovator agents and the work in the learning collaboratives, where the CCOs themselves will decide what they feel like they need to work on in their community. I think there are lots of pieces. The community comes together to do a community health assessment, and they will they'll use that as a guide for where they should focus their attention as well.
Thank you.
Blown your mouth. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Thanks for the great work, Tina.
Thank you.
Bruce, thanks for all your support. Close informational hearing on metrics. We now know it's 3.9 pints to a liter.
We're going to transform that in the future.
Yeah, to a benchmark. We are adjourned. Oh, remember the
tour.
The tour of the state hospital on Wednesday? Is that 12:30?
12:30.
And where is it? Out in the front?
That's my understanding. I'll double check.
12:30 out in front, most likely.
Oh, you got my message right.
I did. Thank you.
I did that.
And no meeting on Friday.
I did.